Welcome to Smith Weekly Discussions, an occasional program for our members of Smith Weekly Research. Please note this program is a private discussion and everything contained herein is for entertainment and educational purposes only. With that, we hope you're in a comfortable position, along with your favorite beverage, to enjoy the discussion. We remind our audience to examine our show notes attached to each of our shows to better understand how our program functions. Before we get into our discussion, we want to say thanks for questions coming from our audience at Smith Weekly, including Matt S., Jared W., Randy L., and Brian H. On the program today is a returning guest. Mr. Luke Alexander is back with us. Luke is the president and CEO of Nucor Gold. The company is focused on development of its Enchi Gold Project in Ghana, West Africa, which has just released an updated preliminary economic assessment on the project, highlighting the potential and viability of a conventional heap leach mining operation at a reasonable capital expenditure to get into production, with a company's sustaining production profile around 100,000 ounces of gold on an annual basis. Nucor Gold is listed on the Toronto Venture Exchange under the symbol NCAU, as well as on the US OTC markets under the symbol NCAUF. Luke, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, hi, Andrew. Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, thanks for coming back to update. And we just talked a few weeks ago, but I thought it was a good idea, and I think you concurred, to have you back on the program to cover off an update since this revised PEA has come out for the Enchi Gold Project. Talk about the results of the revisions, and then let's dig into a few specifics.
Yeah, so we released a updated PEA, which outlined very good economics for our Enchi project in Ghana. In terms of the gold price we used a base case of 1850 gold. And at an 1850 gold price, we outlined a very simple open pit heap leach project with extremely robust economics. So at 1850, we've got an after-tax NPV for the project of US $371 million, after-tax IRR of 58%. And one of the things that really helps drive the economics of this project is the fact that it's a heap leach project, which has very low upfront capital of $106 million. Under 2-year payback, a 1.6-year payback for the project. And the nice thing is that this is a project that produces 122,000 ounces per year at a very low all-sustaining cost of $1,018, so just over $1,000 per ounce. So very robust heap leach project, simple to build, low upfront capital, nice production profile, and a $371 million after-tax NPV. One of the things we've been talking to people about since this was released last Thursday is, you know, I challenge people to go out and find another project that has these kind of economics that sit within a junior who can put the project into production. So we're extremely excited by the results that came out of this study.
Luke, that's great. And we talked a little bit about the cost profile of this. You know, one of the things that I think the audience needs to make sure that they understand, and although we're in an environment that it likely does not happen, the downside sensitivity. If you look at the results of this, and IRR, this kicks off at the current gold price versus your guys' baseline case of 1850. Let's take it on the downside for a moment here. You talked about the all-in sustaining cost. This project can work pretty well, even at 1500. So just talk about the flexibility in the sense that you guys don't have to have the current gold price. You don't even have to have the baseline case for this project to work. So just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, interestingly, a lot of people have been saying, why did you use 1850 when gold's at, you know, 2350? So I think a lot of people would argue that 1850 is a potential downside case. But to specifically answer your question is, you know, let's say we use 1650, or I don't know, you tell me, do you want to use 1650 or 1750 as a downside case, Andrew?
1650, let's go with that.
So at 1650 gold price, we're looking at an after-tax NPV of 266 million, so call it 270 million, and an after-tax IRR of 44% and a 2-year payback. So you kind of pointed to it. The downside case on this project is still an extremely robust project. So again, I would challenge people to go and find a project that even on a downside case has the type of economics and payback period that our project has. Within our presentation and within the press release that we put out, we did put a bunch of different sensitivity tables in there. So we put, gold price sensitivity tables in there, so you can pick your gold price anywhere between 1650 and 2350. We also put sensitivity from an operating cost perspective, from a CapEx perspective, and from a gold recovery perspective. So lots of detail in the presentation and press release. So I'd encourage people who want to look at our project using different metrics, then that information has been provided in there. Maybe simplistically, a way of looking at gold price sensitivity is for every $100 move in the gold price, we have roughly an after-tax NPV move of $80 million, roughly 7% move in the IRR. So going from an 1850 to a 1950 gold price, that takes our after-tax NPV from 370 to roughly 420, which is a $50 million move. Sorry, I think I said 80 million. That's pre-tax. After-tax, it's a $50 million move. So for every $100 move in the gold price, you get a $50 million, increase in the increase or decrease in the after-tax NPV and a 7% increase or decrease in the IRR. So 1850 going to 1950 takes you from a 58 to a 65% after-tax IRR. If we look at it at today's gold price, so let's say 2350, we are looking at an after-tax NPV of 632 million US, after tax IRR of 92%, and just over a 1 year payback, a 1.1 year payback. So again, the economics at today's spot price are fantastic.
Good to for investors to get their head around the downside, because you have to also look at that and of course where we are today, and even the baseline is quite conservative, as you pointed out. With respect to project, we know that the CapEx there is very palatable to CapEx, but talk a little bit more about, first we'll come back to that CapEx here in a moment, but talk about the financing options to get this capitalized as you guys progress. Would you see, as things go here, that a conventional debt equity mix would be the preferred route, or would you guys look at other mechanisms like offtake? Would that be on the table? Or of course, there are some royalties already existing on the project, but how do you look at that financing? And would it also be all together one piece, or do you see this being bit off in stages, if you will?
As a management team, ultimately want to keep all of our options open, because the more options and more doors you keep open, the more optionality you create, which should flow through to, providing the best cost of capital for the project and for and ultimately for our shareholders. So we will look at all the different options available from a funding perspective. I think most likely a combination of debt and equity would be the best path forward for the project. If you look at $106 million of upfront capital, let's say a 50-50 debt equity split. So let's say 50, 55 million debt equity split. That is the size of project that's very attractive for a number of lenders, both your conventional banks as well as some unconventional lenders, the private equity type groups who are out there. Interestingly, if you look in Africa, we've seen a number of projects getting funded on the debt side by different African banks and lenders on the continent. And the number of those financings have been done at very attractive levels. So, we'd keep all those options open, as well as some of your more traditional type bank lenders as well. So I'd say a 50-50 debt equity type financing would be the way to push the project forward. But again, We will keep all avenues open, whether that's prepay type agreements, stream type agreements, royalty. But from where we sit today, given the economics of this project and the payback periods and a lot of the metrics that the banks would look at, we think that would most likely be where we end up from a financing perspective is debt and equity.
Luke, appreciate that, and always good to get a flavor there as to what we can expect here. With respect to CapEx, 106 million Canadian dollars, I'm sorry, 106 million US dollars. How do you see that expanding, Luke, over the next 2 years as you guys progress on resource confirmation, expansion, feasibility work, permitting work, and all those activities that are going to be happening over that 2 year period where, hypothetically, around that period, you look to start the financing or pieces of it. But just talk about how you see that expanding in terms of, yes, it's likely that that is going to increase, unlikely that it's going to decrease.
And so I think one of the important things to highlight with this study that we put out is who our lead engineering firm and consultant were. So Lycopodium is the lead engineering consultant that we worked with on this project. For many of your listeners, and I'm sure for you, Andrew, Lycopodium is a household name. They are a global firm, but they have done an exceptional job in Africa and specifically in West Africa in terms of bringing projects in on time and on budget or ahead of schedule and ahead of budget. We've put a slide into our presentation, which I'd encourage people to look at, but it's got, a dozen odd projects in Africa that Lycopodium has built and done the studies for that have come in on time, on budget, on time, ahead of budget. These are projects that have been built by B2Gold, Endeavour, West African, Orezone. So, a number of different companies. And so they, as an engineering firm, Lycopodium has become the gold standard in Africa and specifically West Africa. Specifically in Ghana, Lycopodium is one of the lead engineers who's working with Newmont on their billion-dollar expansion of the Ahafo project, which sits along trend from us to the north. So when you look at these numbers and you hear the economics of the project, I think it's important to, look at who led the project. To tie it back into your question in terms of CapEx, the numbers that are presented in this PEA obviously are from our lead engineer. We worked with a number of different suppliers in Ghana and across West Africa to get quotes to ultimately feed this study. So we're very comfortable with the CapEx that was presented, as well as it includes a 20% contingency. So there's additional buffer in there from a CapEx perspective. Over the next couple of years, we'll see what happens from an inflation perspective across the industry. But I know a number of the larger mid-cap and major companies are actually starting to talk about a stabilization of some of the inflationary pressure that we've seen over the last number of years. And I would hope that that continues so that we don't see a meaningful increase in CapEx over that period.
Good to see that, and I think there'll be some, hopefully, some optimizations, maybe some cost reductions throughout that. But of course, we have these, how do I characterize it, Luke? These irresponsible printing of currencies to where the fact is just going to get more expensive. And I think it's probably already baked into the cake too, right? So inflation's obviously a big deal here, as you well know.
Well, and Andrew, I guess if that's your view and the view of some of your listeners, then we have a natural hedge. And that's the nice thing about being a gold project is, we have a natural hedge because in the environment that you're referring to there, the price of gold should go up. So our NPV obviously goes up with the price of gold. So you've got a bit of a natural hedge from that perspective. So I would just add that to your comment.
Well said. Very attractive what we've seen here so far on the PEA, and of course optimization work as you guys go through the continued studies and getting that dialed in even tighter. With respect to pre-construction activities and long lead times, and I guess this comes back to Blue course to financing a little bit, but pre-construction, long lead time items, as you know, some items can get quite long in the tooth on lead time on certain orders and engineering work, and of course, fabrication capacity issues and other things we've seen come out of the woodwork over the last 4 years plus. Would you look at ordering some of this equipment ahead of time and ahead of permit approval, Luke? Or do you think that there's sufficient time, given the size of this project, I mean, it's not terribly big, to place maybe all of those orders after that permit approval? Or do you think this just ties in, I guess, the stage financing process potentially here as well? But what's your thoughts on just pre-construction activities and also those long lead orders and how that fits in with permitting?
Yeah, so I think it's important to just remember that and highlight again that this is a very simple open pit, straightforward heap leach project. So a number, we don't have a huge CIL plant that we need to build. We don't need to build tailings facilities. So the equipment required is quite standard equipment and easy to access from that perspective. I think you just touched on it at the end of your question there, but I think one of the biggest long lead items for companies in a lot of jurisdictions is permitting. And that's one of the things that we often talk about is go and stick 5 or 10 years in front of any NPV model and see what happens. So for us, being in Ghana, we have environment that wants to see mines built. So our view is, from when we put our mining lease application in, we'll have that within a year. So in theory, if we move things along, we could have this project built within 2.5 to 3 years. Obviously, there's a lot of steps in between and we're beholden to the market, but from a standstill of where we are today to actual production, that's the kind of time frame we're talking about. Again, Andrew, I would encourage and encourage you and your listeners to get in touch and highlight other jurisdictions where that's the case. And through that period, we would need to complete a PFS and an FS. So that's including that as well. So that's one of the big advantages we have is from a long lead item perspective, which I would say the biggest for most companies is permitting. That's something we feel we can get done in a very reasonable time frame. Small kind of example of support that I would just highlight is within 15 minutes of us releasing this PEA to the market, I had an email from the CEO of the Minerals Commission. And it was congratulations, Luke, to you and your team. Great results, great economics. What can we do to help to take this to the next step? And that's one small example of the kind of support that we've got in Ghana to put this project into production. So long lead item, I think the biggest is permitting, and we feel very comfortable with the ability to get this permitted in a reasonable time frame.
Yeah, thanks for that, Luke. And it's a bit subjective and a moving target with respect to permitting lead times in different jurisdictions, as you well know. And then, of course, great comment with respect to putting 5 or 10 years in front of a net present value model and see what happens. That's a very good point as well.
I did
And
enjoy your chuckle on the back of that one, Andrew,
I.
because you've obviously looked at that.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. As you said, this is one of the simplest proposed operations that you can get out there in the gold sector. And so the complexities are less. Some of the lead times for those special equipment substantially cut off. Lead time on permit, still important, of course, even in Ghana. And then also human resources, as you well know, can be a challenge as well. We've seen that more frequently now in the entire natural resource industry as well. So,
And Andrew, can I actually just touch on that point from a
yes.
human resources perspective? Because again, I think it's an important point, and you're absolutely spot on that finding talent in a lot of jurisdictions is impossible because mining's become a dirty word. That's the complete opposite in Ghana. We probably get a couple hundred applications a year, or sorry, not a year, a month for people looking for jobs. Ghana produces 5 million ounces per year. It's Africa's largest gold producer. You've got three of the top 10 biggest gold companies on the planet, Newmont, Goldfields, Anglo, all operating there. So very well-trained individuals because they are coming from those types of organizations. You've got two dedicated mining universities in country. So again, beyond the government being supportive, you've got a huge pool of talent in Ghana, and Ghana is actually an exporter of talent across West Africa and around the world. So the ability to bring people into our project relative to, again, a lot of other jurisdictions is very easy.
I think certainly on that point, another bit of an exception, obviously technical expertise, some of that technical experience that can be even more so difficult, as you well know, in certain areas of expertise across the sector. Of course, gold, copper, what have you, we're seeing it prevail everywhere in the natural resource sector completely. So I appreciate the comments there, and also the fact that Ghana actually has, because of its history and because it's pro resource development in a way that helps create wealth and economic activity for that country, that they would have an organic staff that already has a lot of those expertise in country, which is also very useful. With respect to the recoveries, talk about the recoveries here based on this updated PEA, and then also further work obviously to be done with recoveries. And where you see recoveries coming out here. I know initially it was conservative, Luke, but you guys continue to do work, and that'll be firmed up as well in upcoming economic studies. But just talk about recoveries here and how you're seeing that go.
Yeah, so we've now completed over 390 tests across across the project. So from our various different deposits, various different material types, specifically on the heap leachable material, we've completed over 20 column tests, which is one of the key tests to come up with what should be used from a recovery perspective for a heap leach project. We've also then gone beyond column tests and done two bulk scale pilot heap tests. So 15 tons from our Sioume deposit, which is our largest deposit. We then took another 15 tons from our Boyne deposit, which is our second largest deposit. And we ran bulk scale pilot heap tests across that or using that material. After 60 days of leaching, we had 93.5% recovery from our Sioume material and 90.3% from our Boyne material. So we averaged just under 92% recoveries from those two bulk scale pilot heap tests. So those are very good results, and they further support all of the column test work and the bottle roll test work that we've done as part of the test work to prove up the amenability of the material for a heap leach operation. So we're very pleased with the results from those tests. So in this study, we used an 81.8% recovery relative to the 91, 92 that we got from our test work. So obviously a big discount. We've also internally started to do some analysis of, okay, what have people, put or achieved from a lab test perspective, and then what did they achieve from a commercial operation perspective? Some of the numbers we're starting to see is about a 3% discount from lab test to commercial. If you look at the 10% discount that we're using, I think that's your comment about being conservative in terms of the recovery. So what we say is, with a $371 million after-tax NPV at an 1850 gold price, we don't need to be aggressive with recoveries. We don't need to be aggressive with CapEx. We don't need to be aggressive with OpEx. Let's put a study out that's extremely defendable. And as we move forward, let's look to optimize to further strengthen the economics of the overall project. So that's the point I'd make in terms of being what we feel conservative from a recovery perspective. And once we get our full technical report out in the next 45 days, we'll see a lot of the detail in terms of, you know, our consultants' views on the recoveries that we put out for this PEA.
And looking forward to seeing the full report come out here in the coming days. One of the other questions that came about was the contract mining route. You guys have disclosed there that you are looking at having this be a contract mining operation. Talk more about that in terms of who might be used for that, or if there is still consideration in-house to draw upon the existing group experience to run the operations on your own.
Yeah, so using contract mining obviously helps from an upfront CapEx perspective. Again, one of the nice things about being in Ghana is there's a huge amount of contract miners in country, lots of different service companies. So we approached a number of different groups who could provide contract mining, obviously used Lycopodium's database of groups that they have had quotes from in the past, and those are the numbers that we then compiled and used to feed the cost of mining on our project. So our view is that, you know, the trade-off of lower upfront capital relative to using owner-operated fleet made more sense to go the contract mining front. But obviously, you know, something that we will probably look at in more detail in the future and run some additional trade-off studies on is the, you know, the owner-operated model versus the contract mining model. But, you know, based on the work that we did, it made more sense in our view to go with the contract mining route for this study.
And Luke, another question as I was looking at some of this and the audience questions that came in, any comments with respect to water management, environmental work, any comments on those fronts as you guys progress these studies?
Yeah, great question. And one of the things I would just highlight again is that a lot of the work that's gone into this PEA is beyond PEA type level work. So we completed a full social and environmental baseline study for the project, which obviously looked at water management, looked at community relations in the local area, you know, looked at all the different elements of the project. Specifically on the water management side of the things, we've got plenty of water in Ghana or specifically at our Enchi project, so no issues from that perspective. And then where we've got the heap leach pad located is it's tucked into a valley, so a lot of the water actually runs, you know, around the outside of that valley, so it's a very nicely contained heap leach location. And then also because of the hills that immediately surround the heap leach pad, there's no visual sight lines as well. Specifically, we've designed it for just under 70 million tons of capacity. We've got an additional 5 million tons, so we can take it up to 75 million within the designs that we've put together. And then beyond that, there's room for expansion in this valley to be able to increase the overall number of tons in the future as we discover more ounces across the overall project. So a lot of work has gone into the social and environmental side of things, and that's all been put forward in a report that we had completed last year.
One of the other things here is, I think this is important to highlight for the audience and discuss, is while you guys are continuing to work on economic studies and bringing this project forward into, let's call it, baseline production profile that you guys have brought so far with the updated PEA, is what the audience can expect as far as potential improvements with next economic study, besides the expectation, of course, Luke, that we will see additional resources come in. We're pretty confident that that'll happen. And then also the potential for mine life expansion. Just talk about those things and maybe some of the things you'll be looking at with the next economic study and some of that work that will progress these other items.
So we've increased the overall size of the resource, which has led to a 36% increase in the production profile. We've also significantly de-risked the ounces. So we currently have 740,000 ounces that sit within the indicated category. So one, and then an additional 970,000 ounces within the inferred category. So one of the things we'll look to do is convert roughly another 500,000 to 600,000 ounces of resource from the inferred category into the indicated category. And that is one of the key requirements to be able to put out a PFS. So resource conversion is something that we will focus on for the next study. But then beyond that, as you highlighted, there's huge district scale exploration opportunity across our project. If you look at all of our deposits, they remain open along strike. So systematically stepping out and adding oxide and transitional ounces near surface that can be thrown onto the heap leach pad to extend mine life is something that we'll continue to look at doing. And then deeper, once we get into the sulfides, the average vertical depth of the pits that constrains our resource today and that were outlined in this PEA are only down to 75 meters, where we see a number of these greenstone-hosted deposits along the Sefwi-Bibiani belt from us, including Chirano and Bibiani and Newmont's Ahafo mine, where they're investing that additional $1 billion, is they start to grow in size and increase in grade as you start to find these high-grade feeder zones that feed the mineralization on surface. We, in our resource update last year, outlined 135,000 ounces of underground material. That's across three different deposits. So, as you and a number of your listeners would know, that's not a mine today. But what it is it's a proof of concept for us. So, going back, continuing to chase these high-grade feeder zones, as well as go after some additional prospective areas that we've identified, is something that we will continue to do to show the longer-term potential of this project as well. So, expansion at surface, simple oxide transitional material that we can throw onto the heap to extend mine life, but then also going after the big high-grade opportunity that we've started to identify at depth is something that we'll continue to do as well.
Good information to know, and it's important to point out that there's continued upside with this project, other deposits, other targets that could potentially come about here. So appreciate the comments there. Well, Luke, any other things to add here? I think we covered off everything that we wanted to discuss on the PEA, the updated PEA that's come out here, and I'll leave you with this and any other final comments as we wrap up. For potential investors who are listening in here, the company has a market capitalization now of about 54 million Canadian dollars. Why should Nucor Gold be considered within the institutional, family office, and retail investors' portfolio at this point?
Management team and board who are truly aligned with shareholders through our 22% ownership in the business. In terms of the production profile, we've got a nice production profile of 122,000 ounces over the life of the mine. When you look at where we're trading today at, like you said, $52 million Canadian, that would be roughly $40 million US. When you look at the project from an NPV to CapEx ratio perspective, at a base case of $371 million compared to $106 million of initial CapEx, you're looking at an NPV to CapEx ratio of roughly 3.5 times. At a spot price of $23.50, that NPV to CapEx ratio goes to 6 times. At a base case of $18.50, you're looking at an after-tax NPV of 58%, which rises to 92% at spot, and a 1.6-year payback, which drops to 1.1 years at $23.50. I would challenge you, Andrew, and any of your listeners to go find a project that's as economic as this project is, that sits within a junior company that trades at $40 million US. So that would be how I would sum up the opportunity for investors. And anyone who's listening, I would encourage you to get in touch if you do find a project like that, because we'd be keen to hear about it and discuss it in more detail.
A little bit of homework for the audience. I'm going to take a pass on that because I think I have a good idea, but maybe the audience can spend some time on that. Always good to try to seek out other ones. Last question, what is the best way for the folks to reach out to the company who have interest?
So we're very active on social media. So if you're on X or Facebook or LinkedIn, encourage you to go and follow us on those. We've also got a YouTube channel, so you can see our full PEA interview on there, which was put out last week. And then, go to our website, lots of information there. We put a lot of detail into our press release. We've just put up the full PEA presentation, which gets into a lot more detail than what we've discussed here, and would encourage anyone to also just reach out. We're always keen to engage with existing and prospective investors. So any of those different channels, feel free to get in touch.
Luke, really appreciate you coming back on the program to talk about this updated PEA. And thanks for taking the time and keep up the progress. We're looking forward to following this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew.